As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to your Tuesday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's a couple of guest hosts sitting in here because you know what? We're going to give our American pals, Custance and Gentile, let's give them the day off. They're recovering from July 4th. We get it. It's Ian Mendes, Arpan Basu, with you here for the next, I don't know, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, however long we go. Huge week coming up in hockey as the offseason officially kicks off. We've got the NHL draft coming up. Sam Cosentino does a great job covering the draft for Sportsnet. Sam's going to drop by in the podcast, talk a little bit, I'm sure, about Sportsnet's coverage of the draft coming up, plus some of the prospects and look at the top 10 picks there. And so listen, this is going to be a fun show. We're going to probably be pretty draft focused here. And I know what, listen, Arpan, you are hosting the draft. Quite frankly,
I was awarded the draft.
You were awarded the draft.
Arpan Basu
is hosting the draft. Now, this is tough because look, you've got all of your colleagues from The Athletic. We're all descending on your city. And let's be honest here, this is kind of tough, right? Because when you're hosting in the same city that you live, doesn't quite feel like you can enjoy it. Or am I wrong here? You can enjoy it as much as the rest.
Well, this is the first time we have a real draft since 2019, but every year the draft actually falls on the Fête Nationale in Quebec, or that weekend, more or less, which is Quebec's sort of national holiday. And so usually I'm not here. And this year I was like, oh, great. I'll be here. And then last week I told her, I was like, just act like I'm not here. Like I might actually be in the house from time to time, but just don't count on me at all. Starting all week, basically, starting Tuesday. Tuesday yeah. Till basically free agency. Just like I'm just not around.
Yeah.
It'll be great though. I mean, honestly, this is Montreal has awarded the draft, the 2020 draft, I'm not gonna say. I mean, it's been pushed back twice now. And so it'll be great. I mean, tickets for this thing sold out in like 15 minutes. Like it was incredible the amount of response they got. From Canadians fans, they have the number one pick for the first time since 1980, and so huge anticipation and excitement in this city. The Jazz Fest is going on. The weather's nice. It's going to be a great week, I think.
Yeah, and listen, you mentioned first time that they're hosting the draft, or sorry, holding the number one overall pick since 1980, and for the younger fans, that was a real controversial year for the Montreal Canadiens. They passed over a guy that would become a Hall of Famer in Denny Savard for Doug Wickenheiser. Now 40 some odd years later, they're back in the number one spot. What's the feeling like there in Montreal? Like it's very rare, I think, to host the draft and have the number one overall pick as they've moved this thing around. There's going to be a ton of electricity in the building. Is there any way, Arpin, that they would trade down? Or is this just, you know what, you're going first overall in your own building. You don't pass up that opportunity.
I've been getting that a lot. And it's also, I've been getting that about, well, they got to pick Shane Wright or else, you know, people are going to boo and whatever. There might be a little something to that. But it's not unprecedented that teams hosting the draft trade their first draft pick. I mean, Lou Lamoriello did it in New Jersey when they acquired Corey Schneider, which was the pick that turned into Bo Horvat for the Vancouver Canucks. That wasn't number one overall, but it was a top 10 pick. Trading down from number one overall. Listen, I would like to think, and I'm pretty sure that this is the case, that the Canadiens are not going to be unduly influenced by the fact that this is happening in their own building with their own fans. They're going to make the best decision for this organization. I think both Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes are pretty singularly focused on improving this club. And so if they have to take a minor PR hit on draft day for something that's smart and helps the team, I think they would do it. And it's an interesting kind of predicament, not a predicament, but it's an interesting situation in the sense that, yes, they could use a center. Yes, they could use a big scoring winger. But they could also use a right shot defenseman. Jeff Petrie's probably going to get traded at some point, I would imagine this week. And if not this week, then at some point this summer. The right side of their defense is not rich with talent. And there's two guys sitting there in Nemitz and Yiricek who you cannot really justify drafting number one overall, but would really fit in to the Canadiens organizational sort of depth chart. So I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen it in, I can't, like, the last time the number one overall pick was traded is, I don't even know when it was. So it's not something that's, it's not only not common, it just doesn't happen. It's non-existent, even for the top five picks. So I would anticipate them stepping up to the stage and just making their pick, but who knows? There's a new administration. It's very hard to get a read on them.
And like you said, though, like, you know, Jeff Petrie might be on the move. As much as we do focus on the draft, this is the week where you feel like a lot of trades happen. In fact, for the first time since the trade deadline, right? The trade deadline is the last time you felt like there was some sort of pressure to get these types of deals done. Now we're going to get all 32 general managers in Montreal. You'd like to think the wheels of motion or the wheels are in motion for some deals. And look, we saw it on the weekend. Tampa trading Ryan McDonagh to Nashville, essentially in a straight salary cap dump. They get Philippe Myers and a prospect in Grant Mismatch. I'm wondering, though, like, how does Julien Brisebois do it, Arpin? Because I feel like, and Nashville's getting a good defenseman. Don't get me wrong. They're getting a good defenseman in Ryan McDonagh. But Tampa just needed to get out from under that contract, and they did without having to give up a second-round pick or add a sweetener to the deal. How do they keep doing this?
Well, I mean, I think this case is a little different because you nailed it. Ryan McDonagh is still a good defenseman. And the thing about Ryan McDonagh, though, is that he's one of those guys that's more valuable on a good team. You don't want to be leaning on him as your number one guy, or in this case, your number two guy in Nashville. He's better in a competitive environment, you know? I don't think Ryan McDonagh is the type of player you should necessarily have to add a sweetener for. Maybe another team would have asked him to retain some money, which I would guess was a non-starter. But, you know, Julien Brisebois' knowledge of the salary cap and the collective bargaining agreement is probably second to none. I mean, there are some people who actually crafted the collective bargaining agreement who work in Toronto, Brandon Pridham. But I mean, and there are guys around the league, but his history as a lawyer and as a professional is all rooted in manipulating collective bargaining agreements or manipulating the rules in place to benefit your club as much as possible. And there's no one in this league who has done that better over the last few years than Julien Brisebois. The one that struck me was when he was able to find a taker for Tyler Johnson, when the whole league knew that he had to get rid of Tyler Johnson. He still managed to do it. And this was no different. And he's did it, you know, within days of losing in the Stanley Cup final. It's pretty impressive. And it does create the possibility that they could bring someone like Andre Palat back. But what I'm going to be most interested to see with the Tampa Bay Lightning, because they're not there yet. They're in a competitive window, and he should be doing everything possible to win another Stanley Cup because they have the team to do it. But he has gutted that team of draft picks justifiably. It's not a criticism, but they don't have a lot of draft picks over the next few years. The cap situation is a mess. If Palat signs this long-term deal, he's going to become an anchor at some point. And it's the other side of this. When that team falls off a cliff, it's going to be fascinating to watch to see how Julian Breezeway sort of navigates that side of it when they get there, which they're not there now, just to be clear.
But I'm curious to hear from our listeners on this. If you knew your team was going to have, let's say, a 3, 5, even a 6, 7 year window where you were going to consistently compete for the Stanley Cup, would you not say, I'll push all my chips into the middle of the table for that period of time, and if I have to go the same amount of time on the other side where we're a pedestrian team or we're bad, it's worth it. Like, I would rather, this is just me speaking personally, I would rather have a 5 year window where I'm in every year and then 5 years where I'm terrible. Like, I get it. That's the price you pay for being good for 5 years, rather than, you know, these teams that are, and you know, Philadelphia is the classic, right? They're kind of like, they're always just kind of there and they're always kind of, you know, nibbling at the corners and they're never that bad, but they're never that good. Like, I'd rather just be dominant for 5 or 6 years, beat Tampa, and then be bad for 5 or 6 years. That's just me.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think you're alone in that. I think most of our listeners would agree with you. Julia Breezeway definitely agrees with you in the sense that that's exactly what he's doing. He has put, you know, he has mortgaged the Tampa Bay Lightning's future for the present, as well he should, because when you have a chance to win a cup or multiple cups in their case, you go for it and you do everything possible. And so if you have to give up a first to get a Barkley Goodrow, or if you have to get up a first to get a Blake Coleman or a top prospect or whatever, these things are totally abstract assets, you know. And I remember talking to Carey Price in, I think it was summer of 2019, and talking to him about prospects and all the prospects that are in the Canadian system and all the draft picks they have coming up and everything. He's like, prospects don't mean a whole lot to me until they're on the team. And it wasn't being mean. He wasn't being like mean to the prospects. He's just like, listen, I'm in a window of time where I want to win a Stanley Cup. So that's all that matters to me. So until they're actually on the team, I don't really think about them. And that's how more general managers, I think, should think when you're in a position where you, if you could properly evaluate your team and determine that, okay, we are on the cusp of a competitive window or we're in the middle of one, you know, stop clutching all those draft picks as if they're your most valued possessions in the world. Like, sometimes you gotta take some risks and you gotta decide now's the time and just go for it. And that mentality, some GMs have it, but many don't. Many are far too cautious, and that's why they wind up like the Philadelphia Flyers of the world or several other teams who've just been kind of mushy middle teams for a long time.
Hey, listen, speaking of Philadelphia, I think, Arpin, one of the biggest stories in hockey, and this is one of those stories that even transcended hockey, like I saw it on CNN on the weekend, mm-hmm. and that's involving Flyers prospect goaltender Ivan Fedotov, who was detained basically for, they're saying, look, this guy is evading military service in Russia, and they consider him to be an evader of the army, and he signed his entry-level deal with the Flyers, and there's a lot, as with most things, as we've seen in Russia, are cloaked in mystery. So we, you know, the details are hard to come by. But I thought Mike Russo and Dan Robson did a great piece late last week about Russian hockey players have a huge challenge on their hands this summer. Do they even bother trying to go back home? And this is to say nothing of the prospects coming up here in the draft. Like, this story with Fedotov and the Flyers and what's happening in Russia, this might be the biggest story in hockey right now. Like, it's fascinating to me what's going on here.
Well, it just feels like we're back at a time when players had to defect. I mean, you know, you mentioned the story from Russo and Robson, and, you know, there are Russian players who went back. Some chose not to go back. Some chose to summer either in Europe or elsewhere in Europe, I should say, or in the States, because that risk was real. But, you know, and you can't tell a player not to go back home. But if that becomes an issue, then the NHL landscape is going to be very, very different over the next little while, because, you know, there's already, let's say, a lot of uncertainty surrounding some of the top Russian prospects coming up in the draft. If you're a team and you hold, you know, the 13th overall pick, it's your only pick for a while, and that's just an example. I'm not using the specific pick, but you know, are you going to take a risk on a guy you might not see for 5 years, 6 years? Who knows when you might see the player? So again, yes, cloaked in mystery. The actual details of the Fedotov situation, I think, are still elusive. You know, I mean, it's but all he was really trying to do was to go play hockey, which is what a lot of these guys are going to be trying to do. And so, you know, this relationship is, I agree with you, this one event is like a flashpoint for what has been a far grander conversation about what's going to happen with Russia, not just the NHL, but in sports, international sports in general. And it just seems like Russia's doubling down on it right now.
Yeah. No, and again, that's one of those evolving stories that I'm sure throughout the course of the week or month, it's going to have some different tentacles to it. But my goodness, it is... you're right. It takes you back to, you know, you read those stories of how, you know, Alex McGillney defected back in the late 80s, or the Stastny brothers, and how they had to get out from behind the Iron Curtain. And you're thinking, you thought, well, we'll never see that again. And yet here we are with young Russian players dealing with that.
I mean, like Alex Ovechkin's over there right now. Like, we're talking, you know, there are fewer and fewer Russian players in the NHL. In general, you know, the growth of the KHL has made it far more appetizing for Russian players to stay home. And that's created a lot of doubt surrounding Russian players in the draft, which has led to, you know, fewer Russian players being in the NHL. But there's some, you know, Alex Ovechkin, let's say they just decide, well, you can't leave. And let's say he doesn't get a visa. I mean, like who's going on? Like, what's, you know, everything that's going on in the world, all the sanctions that are placed against Russia. Getting from Russia to the United States is going to be tricky, to say the least. I think that's an understatement. So it's going to be fascinating. I mean, you know, everyone knows Ovechkin's ties to Putin, so maybe he won't run into too many problems, but I don't know if that's going to be the case for everyone.
Hey, listen, before we bring our pal Sam Cosentino on here, talk some draft stuff leading into Thursday and Friday, what a week for the coaching carousel. Arpin, when you look at, see, Winnipeg brought in Rick Bonus. San Jose surprisingly parted ways with Bob Bugner. Just the timing of that was weird. Not so much the dismissal; it's just more the timing of it.
It was crummy. It was crummy more than weird.
Because now if he wasn't your guy, you try and let that guy know in April or May so he can find something else. But you know, Boston went and got Jim Montgomery. The Red Wings reached out, and you know, Yzerman used those Tampa connections, brought Derek Lalonde in to be the coach. Out of all of those coaching moves and dominoes that fell last week, which is the one that you find the most, I don't know, interesting or intriguing that it played out the way it did? Like Winnipeg, San Jose, Boston, Detroit?
To me, it's Winnipeg. Bringing in Rick Bonus, Winnipeg's at a weird point in their team. You know, Blake Wheeler's name is out there. Mark Scheifele said what he said at the end of the season. Pierre-Luc Dubois' name is out there. There's all sorts of moving parts in Winnipeg, and they just seem like a team that either has to go for it in some way, even though they might not necessarily be ready for that, or tear it down. But it just, all of that, the fact that they're at this tipping point seems a little premature. So to me, if you're a team that's about to acknowledge what's going on and start either a retool or a rebuild or some sort of process like that, Rick Bonus is not the guy you hire. Rick Bonus is the guy you hire in the hopes of winning, in the hopes of actually making a run in the playoffs, despite all this uncertainty hanging over like a cloud. But another thing Rick Bonus does is that he's a veteran guy with a good presence, with a guy who has good rapport with veterans, who could sort of navigate the minefield that dressing room might be this season, because I think there's just a lot of question marks and there's a lot of guys with one eye out the door in Winnipeg, and he's going to have to manage that, and it's going to be tough.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Arpan. As I mentioned, we're really happy to have Sam Cosentino with us because coming up, and hey, let's give a plug to Sportsnet. For the Canadian listeners, 6:30 Eastern time, 3:30 Pacific on Thursday. That's when their Hockey Central coverage begins for the draft out of Montreal. And Sam Cosentino will be part of it. It is back to normal, back to in person. So we'll pick Sam's brain on that and some of the prospects. But Arpan, when we bring him on here, and we're bringing him on, he might refer to me as Three Mendes. That's his nickname. Here we go. In fact, you know what? Why don't you tell the story, Sam Cosentino? Because it was, I think, the World Series. You and I covered the World Series together, 2008. I think it was the Philadelphia Phillies Tampa Bay Rays World Series, where you just gave me the nickname. But I feel like you need to explain to Arpan and our listeners why you call me Three Mendes.
Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, looking at me, that I like to eat. And having been around the ballpark most of my life, you know, you get into these ballparks and you're going into Philly. I was there earlier that year working for Sportsnet and got Boog Belly eating the Boog Powell sandwich out there in center field. And, you know, sometimes when you're covering those events, you get the old boxed lunch as you're looking at payrolls of $400 million between the two teams and they're throwing the media a nice boxed lunch, and box lunch doesn't necessarily make the cut. And then you feel a little bit like Don Drysdale, where you're going 59 innings of foodless work. And so you're at some point, you got to get your food on. So Three Mendes, I suppose, being a little hungry as you were and being as slight as you always have been and in such great shape as you've always been in. What was it? Three dogs? Did you pound like three hot dogs?
I didn't. Arpan, this guy saw me eating this same hot dog three different times over 10 minutes.
Oh. Yeah, because he put it in his pocket, right? Yeah. He put it in his pocket. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The same hot dog three different times. Come on, Mendes.
I didn't eat three. But here, come on. Here's a question. Arpan, at the Bell Center in Montreal, they are famous for the intermission hot dogs, or the Shanshou. Yes. What's the most you've ever eaten in one night? At the Bell Center,
most in one night.
Yeah,
I would say six. I had two before the game, two at first intermission, two at second intermission. I didn't eat dinner. I just went all hot dog. This was very early in my career when this was really. I'm like, I'm gonna go all hot dog all night. Two before dinner, two before the game, rather, two at intermission, two at second intermission.
Sick. So yeah,
that's my record. I have heard some ridiculous stories of people. The numbers of hot dogs people have eaten. I heard Chris Pronger was somewhere in the dozen range after a game. Like it was, I don't know the exact number, but I just remember hearing the number and thinking that's gross. Like that's just absolutely disgusting.
A six pack's not bad. A six pack's like, that's pretty good.
What about you, Sam? Six pack
over the course of like 3 hours, you know?
My wife tells me it takes 45 minutes off your life, each hot dog. So I got about 2 years left. And Three Mendes, with what you did in Philly, you might want to check the watch too. Don't be buying green bananas, brother.
By the way, guys, the record for the most hot dogs I ever heard from anybody eating at the Bell Center in one go. He's now the VP of PR with the Toronto Maple Leafs, Steve Keogh. But when he worked with the Ottawa Senators back in the day, he had 17 hot dogs in one night. At the Bell Center.
Steve Keogh did that?
Steve Keogh had 17.
Slim, slender, thin Steve Keogh.
17.
Wow.
I guess all those guys who eat at Coney Island are usually pretty skinny. That Kobayashi guy is like a rail, right?
I mean, even so, Joey Chestnut. Yeah.
Joey
Chestnut's in good shape. Stevie Chestnut. you should call Keogh Chestnut from now on.
Yeah.
You'll be Three Mendes and he could be Chestnut.
There we go.
Before this year, my first and only NHL game in the booth was March 1st, 2004. New Jersey, Montreal. Montreal wins 3-2 in overtime. Jason Ward scores a game winner. And so I'd get called up unexpectedly to do that game. And it was 18 years until I got in the booth to do my next NHL game. And I did seven of them this year. But having said that, all of those years that I spent in the CHL at the Colisée, legit steam egg going on over there. So yes. I think I threw the hat trick one night. For sure, two at the intermission and maybe one or two pregame. So I don't have the Arpin six pack, but I've committed the hat trick offense before.
There we go.
yeah, legit. But you know, like I talk about Tremendez, and you know, obviously he's in great shape here. But the Philly cheesesteak, legit. So that created some gastro issues, but we won't get around to that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, man. Listen, like I said, Sam, though, but listen, let's get the – well, we better get the focus back on the draft.
We got to get back on the rails.
You guys are back in person, and this is huge because, look, 2019 is the last draft where you could do it normally, 2020, 2021, all kind of virtual. So – hey, give our listeners a sense of the coverage they can expect this week coming up. And I think it's important, too, because a lot of our American listeners might think, oh, are we going to get the simulcast? And how is this going to work? So maybe you can just walk us through what the broadcast will look like Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. So, you know, the two virtuals, you did with them as you could. For me, I was really fortunate because the first one I got to work with Berkey, and we had an absolute blast. That was the Chinnikov pick by Columbus, and you can go back and look that up. That was pretty funny.
Yes.
And then last year, I was lucky enough to be the only person from Sportsnet to go down there, and we did a combination with NHL Network and ESPN. So Weeksy, who I've known since his junior days, got to hang out with him. Jeff Gorton was part of that broadcast.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. I got to know Gort's well over there, and obviously
we got Jeff Gorton's reaction to the Mayu pick, which turned out to be quite a popular share after he got hired.
I bet.
Yes.
So we had that. So that was pretty cool. So getting back to when we were in 2019 in Vancouver, it's just so nice to be in person. Like I'm a bank teller guy. The ATM, if I absolutely have to use it, I use it. But I like talking to people, shaking hands. And Arpin, you know, we had a good chat there at the Combine, and that's a place where I regularly see you and just love seeing all the people there. But, you know, just being in person is awesome. For the draft itself, with everyone on the floor, I think that's going to create a lot more activity, if you will. But for us, we're bringing a full army of people. We got Merrick and Elliot. Those guys will be working the floor. We got Kyle Bukauskas, who's the greatest young talent in our business, I believe. We got Carolyn Cameron, who's just awesome, worked with her all season long in NHL intermissions. We got myself, we got Pierre McGuire, we got Jason Bukala, who I think is an absolute star to come in the business with you know, his ability to write and his scouting background, former director of scouting for the Florida Panthers. So we got a whole host of people with David Amber hosting, which should be awesome. I mean, he's a pro's pro for sure. He's one of the best people I've ever worked with. So it's going to be cool. So we'll probably come on at 6:30, little pregame, get going at 7. We'll do that. I think in the States, ESPN is covering it from what I've heard, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I don't know if they're going to be on site. And then day two, Bukala and I will switch over and work with Jamieson Coyle and Dave Reed on the NHL Network to go rounds 2 through 7. So that's something I've been a part of the last few years. Love working with that group. Unbelievable group of people over there that put that together. So I'm lucky. I'm hunkered down there for a couple of days. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, day two, that'll be simulcast on Sportsnet, though, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, I think that one's simulcast. Yeah. NHL Network, Sportsnet. Right. I think that's kind of the main deal for everybody. And it wouldn't shock me if ESPN picked it up as well.
Right. Yeah, this is really, I'm really excited, especially other than the fact that it's in my hometown, but just to be live and in person and stand along the rail and try and rope people in off the floor. And but yeah, something you said there that I think is, I don't know if it's more myth than reality, because it makes for great television, right? Oh, look at that. You know, Don Sweeney got up and went and talked to Kyle Dubas. Something must be going on, or he might just be asking him, "Oh, where'd you get those chips?" kind of thing. Like but it just makes for great drama. I remember when I first started covering the draft, I'd be live tweeting every single thing every GM did. But here's what I'm gonna, because every year leading up to the draft, and this year is no different, you know, all this chatter, trades are gonna happen, this, that, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately teams way more often than not, hang on to their first round pick. At the end of the day, they like the player that's available, they go and they make their pick. This year, I'm sure you would agree that this year is a high variance draft. There's going to be a lot of different lists, and there, even in the public sphere, we can see to what extent people have different thoughts on different players throughout the first round. Do you think that aspect of it might lead to actual movement on Thursday on the draft floor with everyone standing next to each other and able to make these deals?
On one hand, I do. And here's the case I'll make for the I do. I'm looking at New Jersey, Seattle, Philly, and Ottawa. Three of those teams have already gone on record publicly and said, we'd be willing to move the pick. Starting with New Jersey, too, Seattle has said that. Ottawa has said that. Not Seattle, but Ottawa said that. So you have these teams that would be willing to move that pick. So when I look at those teams, there's a lot of credence to that, because those are all teams that kind of have to push the boat forward here really quickly. If you're sitting there in your jersey, you're like, we got to get going. We've got our Heisher, we got our Hughes, we need to get moving here. If you're Philadelphia, that's been disastrous the last couple of years, and you have to think that Chuck Fletcher is on watch. And if you look at Ottawa, they're in the same boat. Like, we've heard, oh yeah, playoffs, this and that, good young core, la la la. That time is over. That time is over for those teams. So because those are teams that all have cap space availability, and because their teams all picking in the top 10, that speaks to me that there's going to be some movement early on. The flip side to that argument, Arpan, is when you look at this group of players, typically we see in a draft a very discernible break between players. So there's tiers. We don't really have tiers here. And I just got off the phone with a scout and I said, I'm going to throw 10 names at you. You tell me if you think these 10 names are the top 10 players to go. And I threw out the names and he said, yeah, I agree with you. He goes, but honestly, they could literally go in any order of those 10 names. So with that volatility and without having those tiers, if you're sitting there at pick number 5, let's say, okay, you're Philadelphia, you may well, more so than any other draft that I've been a part of, get the same player at 10 that you get at 5. So what's the impetus at that point for you to, let's say, move up at 10, or if you're 5, move up to 2? When that same player and that same projection may very well be just as good for the player you take lower. So why is it that I'm going to, you know, give up an asset to push myself higher when I think that the asset I currently have could be just as good as the asset that I'm pushing to get? So that's the flip side of maybe we won't see as much action because there's no real discernible tiers in this draft. I will say this. I think after 10, though, it really becomes wide open. So if you are going to put a tier marker in there, it would be those top 10 players. And most scouts that I've talked to have identified the same 10 that I have. They feel pretty comfortably about those guys being the 10 names, but the order really is quite varied.
I find this fascinating because when you say they could go in any order, that implies that maybe it's not a lock that Shane Wright goes one. So if you were putting a percentage down of, you know, it's 90% he'll go one, or it's 10% he'll go one, like what's a safe bet here, or guess or prediction of how likely it is for Shane Wright to go number one?
50.
Wow.
It's 50%. And I'm, you know, if you follow me at all, not on Twitter, obviously, because that's a passing fad. But if you follow any of the stuff,
that thing's gonna, it's gonna crumble one of these days. It's coming, man. It's coming, Sam.
I tell you,
it's just gonna crumble to the ground.
Yeah, that electric car owner once he buys it, right? but if you followed anything that I've written on sports, I've been a Shane Wright fan, and I still remain that, and I believe strongly in Shane Wright because I feel like I know the young man better than most people do, having gone back to his time with the Don Mills Flyers and some of the experiences he had to go through there, winning an OHL Cup, speaking at the banquet, that sort of thing. So I feel I really know the kid, and I love the character that the young man possesses. So I believe in him. And that's not to say, oh, 94 points, what a bad year. The fact that he's missed a full year of development, all those other things that come into play, I still believe in him. I don't think the Montreal Canadiens believe as strongly in him as I do. And Arpin, you would be the authority on that. And I'm sure you've heard a lot of the same rumblings that I have. Having said that, this guy's a really good player. So there is going to be some buyer beware there. And I don't care what any general manager tells you, the public backlash of not taking the player that's been projected to be this guy for 3 years is going to be a challenge that Montreal will have to navigate if they don't go down the road of Shane Wright. Now, having said that, I've heard a bunch of wild stuff too. And I do think that there has been some conversations, at the very least internally, that they would love to acquire the second overall pick. And that would satisfy a number of needs. A, you're able to get the center. B, you can parade Shane Wright out there as the number one pick, as the guy he's projected to be. You really love Slavkovsky, so you still get him anyway with the number two pick. And he still addresses a need that's probably going to be create a hole there is going to be created a little bigger once we get through this draft, whatever happens with Josh Anderson, that sort of thing. So, but to get back to answering the simple question, I think it's 50-50 now that they go with Shane Wright.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, 50-50 basically means you don't know. and I don't know either, right? I'd go 50-50 too. I mean, the thing about Slavkovsky, you know, I spoke to a bunch of people at the combine, and the one point that was made to me that really kind of changed my view of things is everyone's like, well, if you have to pick between a winger and a center, you go with the center, right? It's a higher value position, most important position when you're building a team. The point that was made to me is that yes, it's hard to get centers other than in the draft. It's also hard to get 240-pound slick skating, slick hand scoring wingers anywhere other than the draft. When that player reaches the NHL, trading for that player is almost impossible, and signing that player in free agency is going to cost you too much. Like, it's just, you're going to have to overpay for that. And so I think that's something to keep in mind as well in the Canadiens' thinking right now, is that yes, center is a very valuable position. Yes, having a Shane Wright, Nick Suzuki 1-2 combo, very similar, like, cerebral type players who really think the game well and are able to anticipate where the game is heading much better than most of their peers. And it would be interesting to see that combination. But, you know, Slavkovsky's got a bit of a unicorn aspect to him that really, I think, is really what's appealing to the Canadiens in him particularly.
Well, let me ask you this. I think it's safe to say that Cooley's out of the mix. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say 100% out of the mix. Like, okay. Listen, the GM and the head coach know that kid really well. Like, just like you know Shane Wright really well.
Yeah.
That's how they have, that's their relationship with Logan Cooley. So yeah. I wouldn't put him 100% out, but yeah, in all likelihood, he's not going to be the number one pick, I would think.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a fascinating element to me. And one thing I'll add to what you said, in our meeting with Slavkovsky, Jason Buchla, who I've already mentioned, he's brilliant, but he had some intel that, that Slavkovsky had played some center. And he did up until a couple of years ago. And I think that part has been less discussed in media circles, probably more discussed in Montreal circles, that if they do feel that there is potential down the road for him to make that move, sort of like a Tim Stützle and the transition we're seeing with him in Ottawa, boy, that changes the game entirely, in my opinion.
I heard one story about that. Apparently, when the Rangers drafted Kako.
Yep.
So Gorton was the GM. Nick Bobrov, who is now the co-director of scouting in Montreal, was the European scouting director at the time. And so apparently the Rangers went to Kako and said, hey, would you have any interest in playing center? And he said, no, I'd rather play on the wing. So they just kept him on the wing.
Interesting.
So there's a little history there in the sense that they might approach the player with something, but they're not going to dictate it to him. So if Slavkovsky himself is more comfortable on the wing, at least in terms of what Montreal would do, they would leave it up to him as to where do you feel most comfortable playing the NHL, and that's where we're going to play you.
Yeah,
which I think is the way to do it, though, I think.
Yeah, and it's funny because we talked to Craig Ramsey a little bit too, and you know, with all of his NHL experience, and he felt that he'd probably be best just staying where he is. Now, you know, everyone puts that premium on the center position, and I get that. So That's the interesting element, I think, to this conversation that's probably been talked about the least, is if Montreal truly believes that there's projection at center there, then I think that 50% that I talked about leans 70% in the favor of Slafkovsky.
Sam, let me ask you one more question here, because I know we've probably already kept you longer than we promised, but this has been great. One name that I've heard
all that hot dog talk in the meeting. I know, seriously.
we took most of the time talking about hot dogs.
I blame the host.
if you guys want to talk, I love it. I'd be happy to stay for whatever.
Yeah.
Well, listen. Right. We don't want to overextend it, but hey, I do want to ask you about one name, Sam, that I've heard more and more as we get closer to the draft. That's Marco Kasper.
Yep.
And that's not a name that 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, I saw kind of cracking into the top 10, but I do see him now in some people's top 10. Like, what can you tell us and our listeners about Kasper? Because he seems like he might be one of the more interesting names here in the draft.
He will be a top 10 guy, and he will be a guy that for, I think, the general public will shake things up a little bit inside that top 10. I think he comes into the conversation as early as 5. And it may be earlier than that, but I can't see him either getting past Ottawa, and for sure Ottawa, he's not getting past Detroit. So that puts him in the top 8 position. What's happened with this young man is he started the year in Rogla. It's the Abbott brothers that run the Rogla program as general manager and head coach. So those guys have had experience playing in North America. They made their mark as players, coaches, general managers in Denmark and in Sweden. So they are very familiar and still very connected with what happens in North America and the NHL game. With Marco, early on, like with most young players, they didn't entrust him with a lot of high leverage minutes or a lot of minutes in general and wanted him to earn his ice time. And Marco accepted that challenge, at times challenged it, but accepted the challenge of being played less to understand that he would have to play the right way in order to generate more minutes. And as the year went on, that's exactly what happened. Went into the playoffs, he was really good. A lot of late viewings, recency bias. You have the men's worlds where he played with Austria. And I think I'd have to double check this, but if he wasn't the top ice time guy for Austria, including defensemen, he was in the top 3. And that says a lot when it's your forward playing the most minutes for you. So I think that steady progression and climb upward tells me that from a playing perspective, he's entered the fray as a top 10 guy. Now, I know for me personally, and I put a lot of stock into the interviews that we do at the Combine, this guy shows up in a suit. He's polished. He's genuine. He's engaging. He's not just, oh, yeah, here, yeah, good to see you, good to see you. Shakes your hand, looks you in the eye, and right away you feel connection with the young man. And then you hear his story, how he left at 16. You know, his parents drive from Austria to Sweden. They stay with 2 weeks. Here's how to use a stove. Here's how to use the washing machine. Here's how to cook your own food. Okay, see you later, bud. Guy goes, learns 3 languages. He's on his own from 16 years old. He's sitting in the high school classroom. It'd be like, you know, turn back the clock 50 years, 3 Mendes, to when you were in high school, and be like you sitting beside, you know, Guy Lafleur in the classroom type of thing. That you have like this SHL player in your high school classroom. So all these little bits and pieces come together for me. You look at the player, you look at the character, and all of a sudden you got a top 10 pick.
Earlier you mentioned how your top 10 lined up with that scout that you were talking to. I think, you know, for the benefit of our listeners who maybe aren't on sportsnet.ca every day, though I don't see why you wouldn't be, you should go read Sam's work there. But your top 10 on your latest ranking was Shane Wright at 1, Cooley at 2, Slafkovsky at 3, Nemitz, Juracek, Savoy, Gauthier, Kasper, Kemmel, Lekromäki. So after those 10, you feel the field widens, right? So what I wanted to ask you is, because the Nemitz-Juracek thing, you'll get 10 scouts in a room, 5 will say Nemitz, 5 will say Juracek, depends on what you're looking for in a defenseman. But after those two, the defense group in this draft I find fascinating because there's a lot of variance. You know, I think you had Matejczyk at, what, 13?
Yeah.
Is that right? No, you had Korchinski at 13 and Matejczyk at 16.
16, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I've seen him as low as, like, late 20s. I've seen him as high as, like, 12. I've seen, and like, Owen Pickering's another guy like that. You know, Minchikov, who you had a bit later than some other guys. I mean, how do you see, is this a unique year in terms of getting a handle on how these defensemen slot in this draft? Because I just feel like Matejczyk could go 12th, he could go 30th, Like, yeah. I have no, it could go anywhere in that range. It seems odd to me. Is it odd?
So it is odd. So those rankings were done in June, and we'll come out with a mock draft on the 5th, which is, by all intents and purposes, recording here on the 4th, Tuesday the 5th. And that mock draft is going to look a little bit different, especially inside that top 10. I have Matthew Savoy outside of that 10 now. You know, I have Casper in there. I have Korchinski in there at number 10. So there'll be a couple of tweaks and changes. So I just want to make that clear so I don't look like a fraud. Like, here's what happened in June. Right. I think sometimes we have to differentiate between what a ranking is and how I would feel as a player if I were drafting, or a mock draft, and what I feel the team is going to do with that pick. Yeah. And there's a lot of variance there. And not only that, but we've seen some hockey since that time, and we've gone through the combine since that time. So things change. So understand that the mock draft is separate from the rankings. I want to make that distinction clear. The next thing, when you ask about the defenseman, what's kind of neat about this class is I think a lot of the defensemen emerged as the year has gone on. And I blame part of that on the pandemic. We talk about no goalies this year. Well, why? Well, because they missed a year of hockey. And that's the most important thing that a goaltender can have for his development is games. Well, they missed. I don't care which league you played in, you missed at least 50% of a season, and in some cases, a full season. So that's why there are no goalies to speak of anywhere near the first round. I don't think any should be taken in the second round, but someone will jump because they have multiple picks. When I look at the defenseman, that's the next position that requires games in terms of steepening the developmental curve. So when we started the year and we looked at projections for this draft, we didn't see a ton of defensemen. But as the year got on and we got into the second half and people got back up to speed again, all of these guys started to emerge. Korchinski, huge rise. Pickering, huge rise. Matejczyk was probably a guy who was always going to be there. Minchikov, huge rise. So Ryan Chesley, huge rise. Again, so it was the fact that they were just able to play somewhat of a normal schedule and play a lot. And that's why we've seen the emergence of these guys come to the fore. The second point I make about defensemen is that there are a number of right shot defensemen. And that always tends to add particular value, especially if you have a coach who values that left-right matchup the way Mike Babcock did for so many years building those national teams.
Most coaches do, though.
Yeah, and most coaches do have that, right? Yeah. You know, you have a guy that typically at times can go play the offside and be just as effective over there, but pulling pucks off the boards in the backhand, that sort of thing. So that adds value to that group of defensemen. If I were to break them down, for me it goes Nemich, it goes Yurchek, it goes Korchinski, Minchikov, and then it starts to get a little bit varied after that. I think Chesley is going to have a huge move forward and is probably the fifth guy there. Okay. And then I start to look at Pickering and Matejczyk being in that class there. You have Lamoureux. And one guy that I think no one's talked about that will be in my first round of the mock draft, probably at the end, is Noah Warren. I just think the world of this young man. And based on what we've seen in the playoffs the last 5 years, big hulking defensemen who have durability, who are out there to play to, you know, with a high compete level, those guys they're expensive. You know, David Savard goes for a first round pick. Would you have ever thought that? Would you like to draft that guy in the first round and have him be yours right from the start? Probably would. The Ben Chiarot won for a first round pick. So I think Nora Warren actually has upside better than those guys down the road. So why wouldn't you go take him in the first round as opposed to expending one later to try and get him? So I think Noah Warren is probably the guy for me who's going to get a little bit more love than maybe some of the other people that do what I do think about. And I love the young man. I love how he's developed. I love that he fits the game and he fits the mold with the recency bias coming off the cup so close to where the draft is.
Just for our listeners, though, our own Julian McKenzie wrote about Noah Warren just last week and made exactly the point Sam just made. So if you want to read more about Noah Warren, go check out Julian McKenzie's piece on him.
Yeah. No, hey, listen, Sam, we'll leave it there because we're really looking forward to your coverage coming up. As you said, you've got a new piece dropping here on Tuesday looking at the top 10. We know that this is going to be a real busy stretch for you. So we're looking forward to it. And maybe the three of us at the Bell Center, we can get together and take a selfie with each of us with a hot dog.
Sam and I can have one hot dog and you can have three.
And I'll have three.
Yeah, that's it.
There we go. Oh, man. I love it. And Sam, do you already have your like shirt, tie, suit combo picked out for Thursday? Like, have you thought ahead? Do you know what you're wearing Thursday?
I do. But after like what's expected to be the hat trick. I got the bull belt extender working.
Nice.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I would go with the yellow tie, so the mustard kind of blends right in.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about, you know, like the inside flap, like Nathan's.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice.
Sponsorship deal. Get it done. Hey, listen, we're looking forward to, hopefully we actually do get to see you in person in Montreal. We are looking forward to your coverage again. Hockey Central for our Canadian audience. Hockey Central, 6:30 Eastern time on Thursday. Sam and Elliot and Jeff Merrick and Kyle and Caroline and David Amber, Pierre Maguire, all of them. We're looking forward to your coverage. So listen, thanks for dropping by the podcast, Sam, and we'll see you in a couple of days.
Okay, awesome, guys. Look forward to seeing you in person. Thanks for having me.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, Arpin, that was fantastic with Sam Cosentino. Now I need to know, does Arpin have his outfit picked out for Thursday? You know?
No. Of course not.
The team that you cover is potentially drafting first overall. Like, you could be in the background of some scrums and, you know, like, there's a high probability you're going to end up on camera somewhere.
I got to tell you, Three, I'm not... I'm not gonna let that pick impact my wardrobe. I always go suit and tie to the draft, regardless. Yeah. So that's something that I just do because it gets me into work mode. If I'm in a suit and a tie, it means I'm working. It means I can focus on my work. So I will I'll be there in a suit and a tie. I can't say which suit. I can't say which tie. I'll probably have a white shirt on. I think I've decided that. Yeah. That's about it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I love it. No, listen, I'm looking forward to it. And look, we have, just for the benefit of our listeners, virtually the entire Athletic NHL team descending upon Montreal this week. So you're going to get a ton of draft coverage. Whoever the team that you follow, you're going to read about them. You're going to hear about them. We're going to continue with some podcasts and whatnot during the week. Sean McIndoe and I, Down Goes Brown, we'll do the Thursday show, I think, from Montreal. So we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage coming up here, and we're getting everybody from the Athletic together. What we're trying to do, Arpin, with Down Goes Brown and I, we have been dying to try and get a cottage invite from Pierre LeBrun. It's never happened. We've been putting out the hints. Gee, Pierre, sure would be nice if you invited us to the cottage. You're not that far away in Montreal. We're in Ottawa. We need to exert a little pressure.
I gotta tell you, man. I go to the LeBrun cottage every summer for a week, you know. So it's the one thing I will say about that is that you got to get on that early because that calendar fills up fast. That man has a lot of friends and they love going to his cottage. So I would suggest when you run into Pierre, because now I think now you've missed.
I've missed the boat.
It's July. No, you have to get on this in like February. And just start dropping hints left, right, and center. Like, oh, geez, I love those pictures you take from the cottage. It'd be really nice to see that in person one day.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, that sounds real thirsty.
So,
you know.
Well, are you? Is it not a proper representation of
yeah,
how you
is.
Feel about
that's,
this?
Yes. That's very accurate. I need to get into the LeBrun cottage.
Yes. You know. There you go. Well, now you've made, this is your first step right here, is this podcast, making this admission on the podcast. And, you know, Pierre, I know, religiously listens to your podcast.
You know
so
he does.
You're going to, yes, he must.
Right.
He absolutely must. So his message has been sent.
There we go. Okay. Well, listen, I'm gonna hope that I cross paths with him and that happens. But again, we're all looking forward to coming to Montreal. This should be a great week coming up for the Athletic. Thanks for jumping in here. Both of us are kind of pinch hitting here for the Tuesday show, but I really appreciate you doing this because I know it's a busy week for you. So thanks for thanks for dropping by. Fun hour. This really flew by, and we'll see you here in a couple of days.
Well, thanks for having me, Ian. You know, I'm on the flagship show. I can't turn down jumping on the Mothership podcast. So it was great to do it. It was great to talk to Sam. I always love talking to Sam. So. Thanks so much.
Listen, this was a ton of fun. And again, thanks everybody for listening to this latest edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a rating, a review. We certainly love that. Subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. You'll get all of our bonus content from the entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial. It's 99 cents a month after that. I talked about some great coverage we're going to have from the draft. If you're not a subscriber with us, you don't read our stuff, great time to jump in now. Give us a test drive. You can subscribe to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow.